You're listening to Simon Scriver's Amazingly Ultimate Fundraising Superstar Podcast, talking all things fundraising, charities, nonprofits, and more. Here's your host, as always, Simon Scriver.
You're very welcome to another episode of my podcast. And if you've listened to me for a while, you've probably heard litterings of me talk about my own, what we would call imposter syndrome. But I never knew it was really called that until recently. But that kind of self-doubt that I have in my own career and my own ability. And one of the groundbreaking moments in my career was realizing that pretty much everyone suffers from that. And on that journey, one of the things that I stumbled across was an amazing article from my Twitter friend, Mandy Johnson. And so I asked Mandy Johnson to come onto the podcast to talk about a few different things because she has an amazing presence online. She talks about some amazing stuff and she's very openly vulnerable about the challenges that most of us try and hide. And so today I have with me Mandy Johnson. Hello, Mandy.
Hello.
How are you?
All right, how are you?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. Where are you speaking to me from? You're in the UK?
I am in the UK in my lovely house in St. Albans with my cat who is asleep on my lap.
Lovely. St. Albans. I used to go to a comic shop in St. Albans. It's a lovely area.
Yep, and the comic shop is still there.
Is it? Oh my God.
Yep. Yep.
Very good.
So you have to come back.
And so you're in the fundraising sector, but I mean, would you call yourself a fundraiser? You're not really a fundraiser. You're a CEO.
I am the second most influential fundraiser in this country.
Really? You seem like you're more kind of a different...
readers of Civil Society magazine.
Yeah? Okay, well, that's good enough for me. But you're much more than that, though, aren't you? I mean, you've been CEO of the small...
Can you be more than a fundraiser, Simon?
Yeah, okay. As an addendum, you've been CEO of the Small Charity Coalition. You've obviously done a lot of volunteer work. You've become a voice for a lot of kind of, would I say, causes or issues that face the sector internally. And that's one of the reasons I like following you is because you're quite vocal about it. We don't always agree on everything, but generally I think we're on the same path. What is your approach to this? You like putting yourself out there?
No, I hate putting myself out there. I wish I could shut up. I just get really annoyed by injustice.
Yeah.
And with everything I do, I kind of have stamped my feet and tried to get other people to do it. And then I end up doing it myself because I just think people aren't shouting loud enough about the things we should be angry about.
Yeah. And you are quite loud, which is fantastic. But this article you wrote on LinkedIn, and I'll put a link in the podcast description, on imposter syndrome. I mean, despite your presence online and your name, I mean, and being number two most influential, you have imposter syndrome?
Yeah, I do. Massively so. And so I do talk quite openly about everything. I think it's a hazard of growing up north. I think northerners tend to talk about things a bit more openly than my colleagues down south do. But so I've talked openly about a lot of stuff. And one of the distinctions I want to make is I have talked about the fact that I struggle with mental health issues. Mm. And imposter syndrome to me has got nothing to do with mental health. So you can be the most incredibly healthy person and still have imposter syndrome. So for me, imposter syndrome is just doubting your right to be in the place that you are.
Mm.
So when I became a chief exec, as a 34-year-old woman, I felt like a little girl and I felt like I wasn't entitled to be in those rooms. And all the insecurities that I had in myself really came to the forefront in every meeting I was going to, every speech I was giving.
Mm-hmm.
And when I spoke to people about it, I realized actually I'll probably feel the same when I'm 75.
Yeah.
You know, it was nothing to do with my age. That's just the thing that bothers me. And I found out that all these incredibly talented people all around me are struggling with the same sorts of things.
It's funny with your age because when you're like a kid, you know, when you're a teenager and you feel anxious and really self-conscious, you think it's all going to sort itself out in your 20s.
Yeah.
And then in your 20s, yeah, you think it might be your 30s. I'll be settled down. Everything will make sense. And then there comes a realization when you have a kid, especially you realize that your parents didn't know what they're doing and they still don't know what they're doing. And
Oh,
I
parents.
don't know if we're ever going to figure this out, are we?
No, probably not. But it's funny because I've got two children, and you see, my 4-year-old doesn't have imposter syndrome yet. He
Okay.
currently thinks he knows absolutely everything,
Oh, nice.
and he also thinks I know everything.
Yeah.
It's we must get to a point at some point, probably when we go through puberty or something, when we suddenly realize we don't understand the entire world
Yeah.
and people are judging us.
Yeah, well, the world kicks it out of you, doesn't it? But that's weird because the people who are kicking it out of you are probably going through the same feeling. So is it like an insecurity that they, project this onto other people or?
I think some of it is insecurity, but I think some of it is either unconscious or conscious bias. So I had it, I did a video about a very specific experience I had with one guy who was just talking down to me a lot, and so I called him out for it, and he was just so taken aback by it. But I think he would never describe himself as sexist or ageist, but I think he just walked in with a sense of privilege and importance. He just automatically looked down on me because he was older than me, and he thought he was more important than me because he came from a bigger organization. So I think people bring both their insecurities and also their privilege into a room with them, sometimes without even realizing it.
Yeah, and it's not, it's almost not their fault, is it? Because I mean, we're raised in whatever society or whatever position. Me as a privileged white male, I'm raised with these biases that I don't even know. So it's not like no one thinks they're an asshole. No one thinks they're being an asshole. They think they're doing the right thing, but you have to kind of step back and acknowledge or self-reflect, which is the hardest thing to do.
Yeah,
Maybe.
absolutely.
Maybe. What's been the reaction to your article and being open and vulnerable like this? Is it mainly positive? Is there some negative?
There's been nothing negative, really.
Really?
It's been quite overwhelming. People have really shared some very personal things with me. And I've just been amazed by the quantity of people who've reached out and said, "You've put into words the way I've been feeling for a long time." The people who've reached out to me are really diverse. I've had young people, old people, black people, white people, people with disabilities, people without disabilities. It's just the whole range of everyone. It seems it doesn't matter who you are, what you've been born into. This is something that a lot of people struggle with. But interestingly, one of the things that you said is you think it's something everyone struggles with. I have found a couple of people who don't have imposter syndrome, and I do think they're the minority, but they've reached out to me saying, "I've heard people have this. Can you explain it to me a little bit more?" And that's why I make a point of, I don't think this is anything to do with mental health. And I don't think the two things should be confused, because I might be wrong, I'm not a psychiatrist. But I think it can make people's mental health worse, but it doesn't have to. So I don't think it's specific to people who struggle with mental health.
So
I
how
just
do you manage it? How do you manage your imposter syndrome?
Well,
Is
this is kind of why I wrote that blog, because that was a question. When I started saying I had imposter syndrome, the next question I was getting was, how do you manage it? And I have developed personal mechanisms, and one really helpful piece of advice I was given by a psychiatrist a few years ago was, your thoughts aren't necessarily facts. So I try and, when I have these negative thoughts that come into my head saying, "Oh, you're not old enough to be here," or "You don't have enough experience," trying to recognize them as thoughts, not facts, is helpful. And I also have what I call, like, my little bank of proof that I'm good enough to be here. So that's why I'll tell you very early on that I'm the second most influential fundraiser. And I do that, I probably sound incredibly arrogant, but I'm just trying to remind myself that other people have said that I'm okay at doing this. I have things that people have told me about myself that I try and keep to try and allow myself to believe them.
Yeah.
You know, so when people give me a compliment, it's, I don't believe it and I find it really difficult to hear, but I try and keep it so that I can refer back to it when my imposter syndrome is getting the better of me.
That's nice. I like that. The it's interesting you saying that you got no negative feedback from this, and I would say the same. Like the more when I speak, I try and be quite open and vulnerable, because the feedback is usually quite positive about that, and I feel better for being kind of more honest with myself there. And I don't think I've really gotten any negative feedback from it. So why are people so scared of sharing their vulnerabilities if generally the reaction isn't negative, or is it negative sometimes?
Well, sharing that article took a big toll on me.
Yeah.
And I felt like I'd really exposed a part of myself. And the only reason I wrote it was to help other people. But then I felt really, really vulnerable. You know, it was quite a scary thing to do for me. So I guess there's that aspect of it, is you're exposing part of yourself. You're letting people realize you're more human. But I also don't think it's something that English people have done historically.
Yeah. You know,
I think we're just getting over a stiff upper lip. And
yeah.
I don't think we're over the stiff upper lip. And I say the experience wasn't negative, but I was asked by my board to stop talking about it. So my board of trustees at the time didn't feel comfortable with me exposing my vulnerabilities in that way. So, you know, there are still certain generations or certain people who think it's not appropriate to share things like that.
Well, so. that's pretty negative. That's a pretty negative feedback. Yeah. And what's the thinking there? That it's distracting from the mission?
Yeah, just it was nothing to do with the charity specifically.
Mm. As opposed to, I mean, I would have thought raising your brand and getting the conversation and your peers and the world kind of looking at stuff like that surely is good for it. Because I mean, the organization you're talking about, I don't think I'd ever heard of it until you pushed it out there. And because you were so vocal and loud about not just about what they did, but about everything, it draws attention to it, which is surely a good thing.
Well, I guess I can't really comment on that.
Yeah.
I'm not the person you need to convince.
Yeah, fair enough. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's an interesting one. I mean, another part of that argument was the because specifically around that time, you would talk a lot, and you still do talk a lot about the diversity of people in our sector, but especially speakers. And I wonder, imposter syndrome, I always imagine it has a bigger toll on people who are already discriminated against, you know, or already classed as second class, or already been told that they're lower. And specifically, I'm talking about women and people of color and people with disabilities. Anyone who doesn't look like me is kind of, it must be even harder. Whatever I feel must be harder for them.
Yeah, I've spent a lot of time thinking about this because I've got a friend who wears a hijab, and she says to me, if you've got imposter syndrome, imagine how I feel. So she's the chief exec of a small charity, and she walked into a room and she says the judgment that she feels is always going to be bigger than the judgment that I feel, because I don't walk in wearing hijab. And she said, you know, people are making they've got so many preconceptions based on what she walks in wearing and her skin colour, and so she's got all of that to battle against. I don't know whether that will make someone's imposter syndrome worse, because I think it's your mind, like your skin colour, your religion, everything doesn't affect your mind. However, I do recognise that there are the people are judging them more. But similarly, I've got a friend who I was talking to the other day, and she's a person of colour, and she said, I just forget, like, I just forget I've got a different skin colour to everyone else. And she was telling me about a board meeting she was in with another person of the same colour as her, who came out of the meeting and said, wasn't that awful? Can you believe the language you were using? And she said, look, I just don't hear it. I don't recognise it. So she doesn't have imposter syndrome. She feels like she's got a right to be there. Mm. And so it just doesn't affect her in the same way. So I think life is harder if you are wearing hijab. No mm-hmm. doubt, like, people are do not treat people equally in this country, so their mm-hmm. life will be difficult. Doesn't mean that imposter syndrome will hit them harder, I think. Don't know.
I guess it's almost impossible to know, isn't it? Because you're not, you can't live two people's lives. Yeah. So it obviously has, you know, what you look like and your background obviously has an impact on how people treat you. That must seep into how you feel. But I mean, I think that's the challenge. The big conversation around the Me Too movement and about women is, I can never understand it. You know, I can never understand what people are saying. And there comes a point where you kind of, in a way, you have to accept it, that if this is the person's feelings, if this is what the person is saying they're going through, that it's true. You know, it has to be true because that's their feelings. You can't tell someone their feelings are wrong. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. I'm a believer of the way you feel is the way you feel.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Can I ask you a really stupid question? So around the time you did the article, there was an article you did, and it was about kind of the diversification of the sector, and you were called out on it, or the people who were called out on it, because it was all white women.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I'm interested because it's like, do you feel like white women have, I mean, because you've always been second class to white men, I feel, you know, this is the patriarchy that we're grown up in. But I get the feeling that now it's like white women are experiencing what white men are experiencing a little bit, because it's like the next level of people are calling you out. What did it feel like? Because you're someone who's very vocal and very good at calling out male privilege. But what did it feel like to then be on the other side of it?
What did it feel like? Gosh, that's a big question. Well, it led to me having a mental breakdown. So that's how it felt like.
Okay.
But I guess the reason I got so emotionally involved was because I couldn't believe I'd done it.
Yeah.
You know, and the way you phrase it there, I was like, yeah, I'm so pleased that those people are calling me out. You know, isn't it wonderful that people are starting to have a voice to challenge white women?
Yeah.
You know, that's real progression to me. And I think what was sad for me in that situation was, so I had 11 people personally reach out to me and say that they didn't feel comfortable with me being in that photograph.
Okay.
So I chose to withdraw my right to that photograph.
Mm-hmm.
But there were 8 other women in that photograph, and all of them stood against me in that decision to withdraw, which is really interesting. You know, so I love your analogy. Like, I do think that for the first time, white women are experiencing what white men have been experiencing for a while, and I don't think the majority of them have thought that through. And I think the reason I felt confident in withdrawing myself from that photograph is I've probably spent a little bit more time thinking about that than some of the women in that photo have.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I think it's like we'll get called out for stuff all the time. You know, everyone in their life will get called out because we're just humans and we make mistakes. I think the difference is how you react to that, you know, is the self-reflection and you learn from that. You know, I always feel like people can make, should be allowed to make these mistakes, and not we gang up on them, but it's like, okay, let's like reflect and see what we can do better next time. And I felt like you did that well in terms of very open and vulnerable, again, in terms of reflection of the situation. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it was interesting to see, because it was suddenly Mandy Johnson, who's so good at calling people out and always on the ball. It was like suddenly the other side of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's why it was so personally devastating to me, because I hadn't ever thought I'd make a mistake, and there I was making a mistake.
Yeah.
And just to be clear, that from my perspective, the mistake I made was being in the photograph in the first place. Like, I just shouldn't have been in that photograph. So of all of the events around that, the only thing I would have changed is I would have said, no, I don't want to be in that photograph.
Yeah. But I really admire you. I think it's really amazing to actually come out and say that. I think it's great. And I think it was such a shame because the article was on, you know, on the right track, or was, you know, the message was right. Yeah. And it just got it got diffused and distracted because of that.
Yeah. And I actually, like, the article itself is quite good, but, you know, a lot of people who were reaching out to me couldn't read it because it was behind a paywall.
Yeah.
Or you have to pay for the magazine to get there. So, I mean, the article itself was fine. I have no problem with it at all.
Yeah.
It's just that photograph.
That's the Twitter problem, isn't it? Because we no longer react to what's actually happened. We react to the reactions. So we see, like, the 140 character summary as opposed to, you know, taking the time to go and look in it and make our own mind up.
Exactly.
And so it can sometimes feel like we're piled on.
Yeah, but rightly so. And I was, you know, I'm more than aware of how Twitter works and should have done it differently. So
yeah, well, at the same time, I mean, I'm sorry you went through that because no one, you know, no one deserves to have a mental breakdown. As someone who's had multiple mental breakdowns, I would say I would not like to see anyone go through that.
Well, we live and we learn, and I think the thing it's made me aware of is I'll probably make more mistakes in the future.
Mm-hmm.
and I need to know how to build up my own resilience to cope with it. You know, I'm my worst enemy. If I make a mistake, I'm going to beat myself up more than anyone can possibly beat themselves up. So, you know, more than anyone else can beat me up. So I need to be prepared for making another mistake, but I'm going to try my bloody hardest not to.
Yeah, but I hope it doesn't censor you, because your voice is so important, and the stuff you say is so on the ball, and you're so good at elevating voices that aren't getting heard. You know, I love it, that I would hate to see you almost second guessing or censoring yourself, because it's such the stuff you put out is great.
Well, thank you, that's kind. I mean, so it was interesting this morning, actually. I was cleaning out my car and came across a piece of paper which was a spider diagram of me trying to figure out whether or not I had to resign from my job.
Frame that.
I know.
Yeah.
And it was really helpful, because I'm now 4 months on since I resigned or something. And in the top bubble was, I have to resign because of my principles. So I'd been asked to stop talking about imposter syndrome and stop talking about diversity.
Mm.
And I just thought, I can't be silenced. And that's not because someone on the board described it as the Mandy Johnson show, which just really was very painful to me, because I don't want it to be about me. Like, the only reason I'm shouting is because I'm angry about the injustice that other people are experiencing.
Yeah.
But what I seem to be able to do is tell their story in a way that people listen to.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm trying to do as much as possible to enable people to tell their own stories. But, yeah, the one thing I can't do is compromise my principles. And part of my principles is that I will stand up for injustice, and I will do it loudly. So,
yeah. Well, good on you. The Mandy Johnson Show, by the way, is a good name for a podcast or a YouTube channel. You should completely use that. You should register that domain. In terms of you helping people, you know, getting those voices and getting those stories out, that brings us nicely onto, I think, your project, which has gotten the most coverage or is the most exciting, is this Great Charity Speakers project. What is Great Charity Speakers?
So there is now a website called greatcharityspeakers.com. And that came about because I was asked to speak at an event, and conference organisers had started to clock on to the fact that I won't speak at majority male conferences.
Mm-hmm.
And I won't be the only woman on a panel if the panel is more than two. So I don't want to be the token, but I also don't want other tokens. You know, basically I believe in diversity and representation and inclusion and equality when it comes to conferences, because I think if people don't see people like them standing on the stage, they don't feel like they have the ability to get there or to move up in their career. So I was approached to speak at this conference, and they said, don't worry, it's we've got a good balance of male and female. So I responded saying, that's brilliant, well done, what is it like in terms of skin color?
Uh-huh.
and got the same response that I get over and over again, which is, oh yeah, sadly, we could only find white people. It's really difficult to find an expert to speak on this topic. Mm-hmm. And I can't even remember what the topic was, but it definitely, you know, it was
people of color in fundraising or something like
exactly,
that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they just don't exist. And so can you help us, Mandy, find someone? Because we know that you have friends who are not white. and so, you know, I started to exhaust my friends of color, you know, in terms of they were the same people who were being asked to speak at every single event because I was introducing them to everyone. Mm-hmm. And so I went on Twitter and just said, look, I've been asked once again whether I know any people of color who are great speakers. Can anyone make any recommendations? And sadly for my husband, that tweet went viral. So I lost my weekend and several evenings for the next couple of weeks, just trying to keep up with the number of names that were flooding in. And so I built this website, greatcharityspeakers.com, which is essentially just a list of, so it starts off with women of color who are experts in the charity space. Mm-hmm. And then there are, when I say women, I mean people who identify as female, wherever that may be. And then there is a list of people who identify as female who also identify as white. But they're at the bottom of the list because I think it's easier for conference speakers to find white women to speak than it is for them to find people of color, because conference organizers, sadly, because conference organizers don't seem to mix with people who don't look like them.
Yeah.
And most of them look like white people.
Yeah, we like picking ourselves, don't we?
Yeah, exactly. So that list was crowdsourced. The only work I did basically was typing it up. Like it came from the charity community. And then I was contacted by someone in the States. So we now have a bit of a US list, a bit of a Canadian list. And I really need to respond to one woman who is kindly pulling together a continental European list as well. So that's what it is at the moment. It's just a list of people who are good at speaking, who have been recommended by others.
So it's based on the premise, because when people organize these conferences and we see that they're dominated by white men, the excuse is always, well, you know, that's the pool. That's who speaks. That's who's out there. Those are the only people who put themselves forward, or those are the only people that we're aware of. And so this website is about flipping that and saying, well, actually, you know, start your search here.
Yeah, well, it's about saying that's absolute bollocks. basically.
Yeah,
it's, you know, don't tell me that there aren't any people of color working in our sector, because that's just bullshit.
Yeah.
And what there aren't, like if you look at the big charities in the UK, there aren't lots of, there isn't enough diversity when you get into the most senior roles. And, you know, when you look at trustee boards and chief execs, but the charity sector that I know is the smaller charity sector, you know, the smaller charities who are reacting to things that are happening in their local communities. And so that generally speaking, they are more diverse and more representative of the people that they're there to serve.
That's interesting. Yeah, because I mean, the sector is predominantly women, but it's as you move up the levels, it starts to get more male and it starts to get more white.
Exactly.
And
basically, the more you can get paid, or the more like brand reputation credibility there is with associated with the role, the less women you will find, and the less variation in skin color and you know, to try and find someone in a wheelchair at that level is really difficult, because people don't get me started.
Well, the other interesting thing on that, which I hadn't really thought of, was I was speaking to Jonathan Levy on a previous podcast, and he was kind of pointing out that if it's a person on a wheelchair speaking, they're invited to speak about being in a wheelchair.
Oh yeah.
You know, I was like, yeah, you have to do your big Himalayan trek with a disability to get the platform, as opposed to you're a fundraising expert who's in a wheelchair.
Exactly. So on the greatcharityspeakers.com, it tells you what their area of expertise is. Mm-hmm. There are hardly any diversity experts on that list.
Yeah.
Which means that none of the people who are not defined as a diversity expert should be speaking about diversity because they don't know anything about it apart from their lived experience.
Yeah.
You know what? You know, I wouldn't invite me to go and talk about how to build a computer because I have a computer. So, you know.
Yeah, I like that. Should people like me feel threatened? People who are stale, pale, male, frail? Should we feel threatened?
Well, I don't think you're stale. And I don't relate staleness to oldness. Well, maybe you are stale. I haven't smelt you recently. Did you feel threatened? Absolutely not. You should feel excited because if we get more diversity into those top roles within the sector, exciting change will happen.
Yeah. I saw in a thread, actually, maybe it was a thread from your Twitter. There was a guy, a white guy, saying he's like, well, you know, this kind of diversity, it's making it harder for us to get in. And my reply was like, well, be fucking better. You know, like if you want to be picked, like be better at it. And now you kind of know what it's been like on the other side, where it's like you're not judged by your quality. You've just got this default pick. Yeah. I find it quite amusing to see the people, the white males, panicking a little bit. I mean, it's a minority. Most of them understand that this is better for the world and the right thing to do. But you do get a few who panic.
Yeah, but I mean, that panic can only come if there's a little bit inside you that thinks, actually, I should probably step down because there's someone who could do it better than me.
Yeah.
And I do think I think as a white man, as a white woman, we should recognize when it's our time to step away. Mm-hmm. And sometimes leaving a space for someone else is the best thing you can do for an organization or for a cause. Mm-hmm. So, if you care about your charity or your cause, you should want the best person to be in post, and that might not necessarily be you.
Yeah. I try and like live by, I think it was Jen Love who said it to me. It was like, you know, what you can do as a white male is elevate other voices, you know, use your privilege to bring out the other voices. And I try to do that. Obviously I'm not great at anything, but that, you know, I try my best to do that. what's next for Great Charity Speakers to Go, or what's next for you, Mandy?
Well, so I don't know a lot of the people on greatcharityspeakers.com. Mm-hmm. And that kind of drives me a little bit mad because there's all these incredible people who've been recommended by others that I've never met, don't know anything about them apart from the fact that they must be good. And combined with that, for some reason, I tweeted a little while ago, how does everyone take their tea? Now, bear with me. This is a bit of a weird story.
Yeah.
So I asked the question, how do you take your tea? And people responding saying, oh, I like mine black with sugar and I like milk and I like Earl Grey. And it really surprised me how much unconscious bias I had, like how many assumptions I'd made about people that I talked to every day on Twitter about how they took their tea. And
do you just sit at home thinking, imagining how these people take their tea? Is that
It turns out I do without even realizing. So Simon, how do you think I take my tea?
Yeah, I mean, you strike me as like a peppermint tea kind of woman.
There you go, see? Preconceived ideas. What is this based on? So the reason I recognise this, the same friend with the hijab that I was talking about earlier, she came back and saying, I like mine with milk and one sugar. And I was like, I never guessed you would have sugar. And she was like, that's because I wear a hijab. So everyone thinks I'm like, never do anything remotely naughty.
Oh my God, yeah.
I was like, oh God. Like that, and it really panicked me. Like, have I just been inadvertently racist? Because I'd assume, but I think I had. Like, I think I had assumed she didn't take sugar because she is, because she's a Muslim. Like, I thought she's.
Yeah. Oh my God. And that's so deeply ingrained.
She can possibly be. Oh, yeah, wow. I just thought she's so well behaved, she's so good, she can't take sugar. So anyway, so combine those two things. I don't know the women on my list, don't know how they take their tea, and I'm probably making loads of assumptions about them.
Yeah.
I want to go out and meet as many of these people as I possibly can.
For tea.
I want to find out how they have their tea, and I want to find out if they don't even like tea. You know, I want to find out the really important things about them, which is nothing to do with diversity, like how they take their tea. And I think one of the things that I felt like I'd lost by having to resign from my last job was I had a platform at my previous employer, and I was lifting other people onto that platform with me. So, you know, I had a platform that people were listening to, the media was listening, you know, lots of organizations were listening to us, and I was able to lift people up onto that. And so losing that platform has been quite a big deal for me. And I've been thinking about how I can continue to raise the voices of the people on greatcharityspeakers.com. So I guess I want to spend the next year or so meeting people from that list and figuring out how to get their voices heard. So I have bought a domain and started to put together a website called Their Platform, T-H-E-I-R, theirplatform.com, which my imposter syndrome is already telling me is not the right name, because that creates an us and them, you know. But then I looked up yourplatform.com and it's really expensive, so I probably got to afford that at the moment. But yeah, so I'm saying probably because I'm still, you know, getting better and still struggling with my mental health. But my aim is to launch theirplatform.com and to use that to tell the stories of all the brilliant small charities that are out there that I was loving getting to know, and also raise the voices of people whose voice isn't heard as often as it should be.
Yeah, I love that. So exactly what we're talking about, using your, you know, what privilege you have, or using, you know, your connections and your networks to raise these people who can't, who haven't, aren't able to get a word in.
Yeah.
That's really good. I love that. So that'll be 2019 for you and beyond. You're going to get that more and more going.
That's the plan. Yep.
So how do people help you with that? How do they become a part of that? They go to the website and sign up, they get in touch with you.
Yeah. So, if you go to theirplatform.com, you know, when we're speaking today, it's still a skeleton of a website, but the hope is that there's going to be a podcast. So I've already started interviewing a few brilliant people who've got some very interesting stories to tell.
Mandy, if you take any of my listeners, I'll kill you.
I'm going to take all of your listeners.
What? The joke's on you. I don't have any.
Well, it was just me. So
yeah, great. You've switched. Okay, fair enough. Podcast to actually talk to these people and hear what they have to say.
Yeah, and hopefully not get them talking about diversity.
Yeah,
unless they know something about it or want to talk about it, but you know, just get them talking about the things they actually know about.
Yeah, it's so funny, isn't it? Because the default is just to think that's what they're going to talk about, is their experience as a person of color, or talk about diversity.
And this is a diverse podcast that's got nothing to do with diversity.
Yes, I love that.
I've put on there, so I've put a few milestones in my own diary just to try and hold myself to account a little bit. But I'm really interested in the idea of doing a conference so that conference organizers can see all of these people and see how good they are at speaking. So hopefully in 2019 there will be a conference that solely features people from greatcharityspeakers.com.
Amazing.
I haven't figured out how I'm going to make it happen yet, but that's sort of the...
Yeah, well, you seem to achieve everything you put your mind to, so I'm looking forward to seeing it happening. How do we get people who look like me to attend it? Because isn't that one of the problems, is when you have these kind of events or conferences, people who are white and male don't necessarily turn up. Because they think, what is it? Do we think we're going to just be bashed at it, or it's just not our... I don't know.
So I've spent a lot of time understanding people not like you. I guess I need to spend a bit more time with some white men figuring that out.
Oh, fucking hell. If you figure me out, can you please let me know?
So I believe in user-centered design with everything. So in terms of how I get people coming along, I guess I'm going to have to talk to them to find out what the motivators are there.
Yeah.
In year one, I mean, hopefully it'll be a conference that will happen more than once.
Yeah.
In year one, if it's full of people of color, brilliant, great.
Yeah,
you know, and if we get no white men, to be honest, I don't care that much. You'll have fear of missing out, and you'll see how awesome it was after the event. So your loss.
No, I'll be there. I'll be there. I hope there's some sort of white male discount. But I'll be there regardless.
Of course, yeah, all white men will be free and you get to sit at the front and we'll have a carpet for you.
Cheap tickets for white men, that's a great idea. All right. So where else do people find you? Your main platform of choice is Twitter. Is that right?
Twitter, yeah. So I am Ms. MS Mandy J on Twitter. Only because I couldn't get Mrs. Mandy J.
Oh, really? Yeah,
Yeah,
you wouldn't take on
it wasn't
Mrs.
a feminist stance. It was just someone else got there first.
I like the new the MX. You know the MX, which whenever I see an MX, I pick MX because I'm like, why do you need to know if I'm a Mr. or a Mrs. or a Ms? I
Oh,
like
so
this
I'm
new.
already behind the times, aren't I?
I've only seen it a few places, but I really like it. I think that's the way. I just don't understand why anyone needs to know this stuff. But anyway, Ms. Mandy J, you're on Twitter, and then on LinkedIn, you're on LinkedIn, Mandy Johnson. And I'll put a link to that specific article because I think it's really good one for people to read, especially for the comments, the people kind of replying to it. It's really interesting to see with all these fancy job titles and everything.
Yeah, exactly. And be aware that for every public comment that's out there, I've probably had at least five private comments,
Yeah, I can imagine.
and from chief execs and, international global superstars.
Yeah, that's
Yeah.
cool. I love
In
it.
fact, I'm meeting Stephen Fry next week, so I'll ask him if he's got it.
Oh yeah?
Yeah,
I
yeah.
bet definitely he does. All right. Okay, anything else you want to plug or send people towards before we wrap up and I leave you
I
alone
want
with
to
your
plug.
cat?
No, I just want to plug the women on my greatcharityspeakers.com.
Yeah, so everyone go to Great Charity Speakers. Have a look down and I mean, yeah, there's so many names that we don't know in there because they're not the usual speakers at the usual conferences. So if we can all spend a bit of time actually opening our eyes to see what else is out there, we might find something which is even better. Fantastic. All right, Mandy, listen, thanks a million for your time and really lovely to see you and chat to you and hear what's been going on for you.
You
And
too.
I hope 2019 is very, very bright for you.
Thank you. You too.
You've been listening to Simon Scriver's Amazingly Ultimate Fundraising Superstar podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and head over to changefundraising.com to learn more or get in touch with Simon. Or don't, whatever. You're big enough to make your own decisions.
Hello, this is Morgan Freeman. For discounts on Simon's best-selling online fundraising courses, go to www.changefundraising.com/training and use coupon code PODCAST. Complete them in your own time, wherever you want. Get busy living or get busy buying.